Per di più tra noi e voi è stabilito un grand abisso. Besides all this, between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed. I have a question for you, sisters and brothers. Which side of that chasm do you think you're on? As you listen to that story about that rich man and poor old Lazarus, where do you think you fit in that story? What Jesus says seems to be pretty stark. There is a chasm. And not just that, it is a chasm that cannot be bridged. It can't be crossed. You can't build a bridge over it. You can't fly across it. You can't jump to get to the other side. Which side do you think you're on? Don't think for a moment that this is just some sort of cosmic chasm. This isn't Jesus giving us a long ago prediction about the black hole ripping apart an unlucky star that happened to wander too close and learn the hard way about cosmic karma. Jesus says that the chasm in heaven is the reflection in our spiritual life of the chasm that exists in the life we have right here and right now. It's the chasm between people who have opportunity and the people who live in despair. It's the chasm between people who are hopeful and people who are without hope. It's the chasm between people who have access to health care and people who have no hope of seeing a doctor. It's the chasm between people who have families and communities and colleagues and classmates and those who are alone and have no connection to others at all. It's the chasm between people whose rights are protected by laws and people who are trafficked like property. It is the chasm between the rich and the poor, between the extreme concentrations of wealth in our day and the vast presence of extreme poverty in every corner of our world. When Jesus told this parable to the people around him, the rich people he was thinking of, do you know where they lived? They lived right here in the city of Rome. They were the richest, the most powerful, the most unapproachably wealthy people on the planet. The very wealthiest Romans in the days of the empire woke up every morning to find a crowd of people in their front yard, hoping that they would get a little handout from the master of the house every day. And if you could afford it, you gave out a little bit here and there to all of those people who had gathered, and then as you walked through the streets of this city, they would follow you around as your entourage. The bigger your entourage, the greater your influence, and the greater your influence, the more power you had. And the more power you had, the greater the chasm between you and the people who lived in the streets and had no home and no money and no name. I'm sure that wealthy Roman, probably in the senatorial class, thought he was doing something good for economic inequality by making those handouts every morning. After all, at least they had something, and wasn't something better than nothing? But does that sound to you like the way a Christian should live? Do you think that just maybe in what Jesus was saying, there might have been a little bit of a critique of how wealth worked in the richest city of his day? And we can read this lesson and think that the purpose Jesus has in view is to teach us that what it means to be a Christian is not to be poor, but to be rich in the right way. That is surely what some preachers in America will make of this lesson this morning when they preach on it. And they are the preachers who have private jets out at the airport. Or We could read this parable as the people around Jesus likely heard it, as a kind of reversal of fortune story that held out hope in the hereafter to the poorest of the poor. But there's a problem with that idea, because that reading also gives us a way to be a little bit too comfortable with the world around us as it is. After all, if this whole awful business of chasms and divisions is just going to be flipped upside down in God's kingdom, if I'm going to get mine and you're going to get yours, then why should we bother fixing anything in the world around us now? I think it might just be possible that Jesus had something else in mind in telling us this parable this morning. I think just maybe we are supposed to understand that deep within this story is the job description for Christians. Within this story is a message for what the purpose and work of a disciple really is. And that's no small thing. It is an especially appropriate thing for us to think about this morning, because this morning we are bringing on board a new disciple, Elizabeth. Is that Elizabeth? Is that Elizabeth? Yeah? Okay. Elizabeth is about to be baptized. She doesn't know it, but she's about to take on a new job, the most important job she will ever have. But it's going to be up to us, all of us, to teach her what that job is and how she's supposed to do it. So, what if the message Jesus is offering to us this morning isn't about the hope of being on one side of the chasm or the danger of being on the other, but instead, it's about what disciples are meant to do? What would that be? I think it's this. Christian people, all of us who claim the name disciples, do you know what we do? We have the job of closing chasms. We have a job to be the people who close the gaps that separate us. To be a Christian means to be a person who devotes as much as you can of your energy, your talents, your gifts, your skills, and your substance to get about the work of changing the structures that we make to close the gaps that separate us. Our job is to close the chasm between hope and despair. Our job is to close the chasm between property and wealth. Our job is to close the chasm between doubt and faith, between disease and healing, between loneliness and community, between pollution and the health of our planet, between nationalism and our common humanity. Our job is to work to change the structures of power and the systems of consumption that humans build that end up creating the chasms that separate us. If we are Christians, then we have signed up for the job of using every resource we have to close those chasms around us. And what if we can't close them? What if the systems that open up those chasms seem too powerful, or too entrenched, or too stubborn, or just too stupid for us to figure out a way to close those gaps? Well, when that happens, we could give up. We could say it's too much for us. We could just put it in the prayers of the people and hope God will pay attention and take note of the things that are beyond us. But I don't think that's the message of the parable Jesus teaches us this morning. I don't think that's what Bishop Curry would say. You know what I think he would say? I think he would say that when we run up against a chasm that we can't yet figure out how to close, our job then is to fill it with love. Our job is to risk jumping right into the middle of that gap, proclaiming that God is alive and at work in the world, and that the work that God is doing is the work of bringing together, of binding up wounds, of closing the chasms that separate us. Our job as disciples, Elizabeth's job as a disciple, is not to make sure we end up on the right side of an unbridgeable divide. That wouldn't benefit anyone other than ourselves. No, our job, and now Elizabeth's job, is to work and to struggle and to laugh and to pray, and through all of that, to change the systems that open up those chasms that separate us one from another. And then when we can't, our job then is to fill those gaps with the love of the God who loves us enough to close the gap between us by coming to live right alongside us in this life of ours. That love, God's love, transforms everything and everyone it touches. And we, Jesus' disciples, we are both the beneficiaries and the bearers of that love in a broken world. So come on, Elizabeth, let's get to work. Amen.